the Pentagon is going to clear. It's all, and if you actually read the report, it's pure speculation. Oh, well, we don't remember exactly. We don't, it's so vague, and that's what upset me. You can't, if you print a paragraph about a report, the journalist should actually read the report and then have some context and decide, oh, well, maybe this report doesn't actually clear McChrystal and AIDS. So
they did this in life and they did this in death.
Yes. I think Michael's reporting was really threatening to the establishment. And I think that's what he really gets out in this book. When he was talking about what he called the lies of counterinsurgency, what he wanted to do with this book was to talk about how the lies are aided along by the news media and the complicity of so many journalists and so many status quo journalists in promoting this.
Michael Hastings' book, The Last Magazine, is out today. Elise Jordan, thanks so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Our website, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll talk about war and robots.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual evening with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. A night with Wisdom of the Elders takes place at the Melody Ballroom, 614 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. It includes a salmon dinner and a silent auction, as well as speeches and a cultural arts presentation. Again, that's a night with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. More information about this event may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Adventures in time and space. Told in future tense. Dimension X. Out of the infinitude of stars and planets in the solar system and other systems in the universe, it is almost mathematically certain that there exist other forms of life on other worlds. Someday, in the future, in 1,000 years, or in the next 10 minutes, daring travelers through space will make contact with the inhabitants of another world. But the question is, will we contact them first, or will they contact us?
Okay. You know, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. This is an opportunity for you to talk with me. Abe is not here. The number to call, 231-8187. Originally, I was just going to talk about the history of war, kinda, and talk about how stupid and just unending and militarily, industrially, congressionally motivated this horror in the Middle East is, and how we all need to realize that we need an anti-war movement of bigger size than the one that fought against the Vietnam War. That the people who make money from war dominate our culture at the political level, dominate much of our thinking, dominate our jobs. There is military-industrial production in just about every state in the United States. Eisenhower, in 1960, he was president of the United States, warned against the very thing we have. a situation where every problem looks like a war to be solved. And it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. Now, that was where I was going to go. But then I got to thinking, how can we here at KBOO begin to look at this world from a little bit more interesting perspective? If you listen to KBOO, you know we are an anti-war organization primarily. You know that we fight for the rights of all individuals. You know that we are very, very much involved in trying to build a peaceful and just nation. But, and here's the rub. I think that we need to research something else. We need to think about something else. We need to talk about future. We need to talk about the science fiction possibilities. We know from our popular culture that science fiction is big. We know from going way back into the 1920s, 30s, even before that, that science fiction illuminated and warned us about the many, many dangers that lie ahead. And what I'm going to be doing is two things. Abe and I will be talking about our usual topics on Tuesdays, but I have volunteered for a while this summer to do the Friday radio talk show. And I'm going to focus on all kinds of issues relating to the nature of this society and welcoming calls from people who want to discuss those kinds of topics. I chose today to begin with a radio show intro from a show that you, all of you, are too young to know called Dimension XXXXX, which was a unsponsored radio show put on by NBC from about 1950 to 51, featuring stories by the greatest science fiction writers around at that time. And it was a powerful and effective device, so much so for me personally, that it turned me on to science fiction as a kid, that it turned me on to the possibility of future worlds, that it turned me on to the possibility of alternative views of the universe, and was a wonderful starting place for an exploration of what could be as opposed to what is, or what might be as opposed to what is. So what I want to talk about, I do want to talk about war, but what I want to talk about a little bit, first of all, is an article in today's New York Times, the Science Times, about robots. Robots. Stephen Hawking, interviewed by, this is pretty amazing, interviewed by Colbert on his show, said in great seriousness through his machine, he said, it would be a horrible thing if we developed artificial intelligence. Because artificial intelligence would be intelligent just like us, or even more so, but would not have the human evolutionary experience. It would not necessarily have human ethics, such as they are. It would, in fact, be who knows what, and serving who knows what purpose. Reproduction of its kind, you know? This is really something that we never, you know, we think about it. It's kind of fun science fiction thing, but it's real. Here's what's going on in the workplace right now. Robots are used more and more to build automobiles, to move goods around, to do a number of jobs on the work floor at factories and supply houses and everywhere. And the robots are killing people. Not deliberately, because robots don't have a mind. But things go wrong. Somebody reaches for something and the robot grabs them and slams them and squish. No more person, you know? This does happen. There's a list of these horrible events in the New York Times right now. Meanwhile, back on the war front, we have developed the ultimate cruelty, a weapon guided by a person sitting in front of a TV screen called a drone. And we send these drones out into Pakistan and out into Afghanistan and out into every place in the Middle East and in the East, and into Africa, and who knows where in the United States, just to snoop on us. We send these drones out, often armed with bombs, often armed with killer weapons, and kill people. A kind of surgical strike, which seems so clean and so fine and so cruel. And this is where we have gone. This is where we're going. War, always a cruel and horrible thing, now becomes a cold and distant thing. The sense of the awfulness of it perhaps obscured by distance, by electronics, by machines. And I want to explore that science fiction-y aspect of these things. I want to talk about all this. When Stephen Hawking, who I think is a very bright man, says you don't want to have artificial intelligence because it won't have the same ethical base, it will not see itself in the same value context, it will be more rational in perhaps a horrible way. When he says that, when he warns against it, and we keep building machines that become more and more intelligent, you know, Google's putting together an automobile, I love this, that will be essentially, you get to sit in it, but you can't drive it. You punch in where you want to go, and it takes you. You know, I mean, this is what's happening. This is where we are all buying into a horrible, dark, robotic future. Philip K. Dick, who wrote the story that later became Blade Runner, do androids dream of, of androids dream of mechanical sheep? This is the world we're looking at. And I really want to explore with you out there the future as it looks to me, a cold, a rational but not necessarily humanistic environment in which wars are waged by machines against humans, in which human beings can deny any responsibility. Remember what happened beginning really with the Civil War, but following through to the First World War, to the Second World War, to Korea, to Vietnam, to the wars in the Middle East. In each of these, enormous technological advances made warfare that was cold and merciless and effective possible. It also, ironically, created a situation in which soldiers fighting as guerrillas, could function very, very well. So here we are again. We have learned nothing. Or to put it another way, the people who run things are very happily, merrily going on their way with the same stupid mindset. We have a disappointing president in the United States who looks to me like he's going to fumble and bumble his way into another Mideast war. We have spent countless lives in trying to secure something pro-American in the Middle East. We're suddenly finding ourselves in an alliance with the Iranians, who we all were being told was the enemy last week. This is the world we are living in. This is the world we are part of. It is absurd, it is dangerous, and it is a future, and it belongs in Dimension XXXX. So, here's the deal. We're talking about the future, and we're talking about the present. We're talking about the horrors of the situation that the United States has enveloped itself in, a world that is both dark and comedic. And I want to hear from you, your ideas, your thoughts how shall I characterize it? It's not the future exactly. It's not technology exactly. It's some kind of quasi-magical notion of human power in a world in which machines, you can call them computers, but they're machines, come to dominate the ways in which we understand choice in life. And I want to hear from you. It's not an easy topic, but it's important because it goes to the heart of how the military, congressional, industrial complex operates. So will you join me in that process? Will you think about a future of machines, of robots, of drones, of killing in a surgical and clean manner, because that's where we're going. That's what's going to happen. Now, is it clean in reality? Of course not. Bodies slashed and burned, people torn apart, horrors beyond belief, all of which are perpetrated and perpetuated by the government that supposedly represents you. All right, I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Anna, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Thanks so much. A couple of things. First of all, these powers that be that are leading us in this path probably are still working out of the reptilian brain. But what I'm wondering is now, because we are extolling the wonders of the robotic life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I'm wondering is, how is it, if they are that wonderful, how couldn't we arm them up with all the information about an education, about birth control, family planning, et cetera, send them out in the world, send these very intelligent robots out in the world to bring this information to the people of the world and hand out free birth control, thereby saving us from the horrors that seem to be coming our way?
Well, you know, yeah, that's a very interesting idea. Here's the problem. When you task machines with doing things that have essentially a function for humanity, you take an enormous risk. We, however intelligent we are, cannot imagine all the possibilities that can be involved in such a process. And we are dehumanizing the interactions between people.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying, that, you know, this would save us from the reptilian brains that are bringing this about for us.
Maybe not.
But, you know, it's just an idea. Been my thought for some time.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
No,
anyway.
Really, thanks. I'm going to get
some other people. Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to talk about a couple of things. I originally was going to talk about the horrors of coming war and past war and the insanity of it. But I think all of you know that. I think one of the problems that we face with progressive radio, with progressive thought in general, is that we go over the same material. We all reinforce each other. That's good. We all empower each other. That's good. We all get active together. That's good. But it's not enough. We need to really think about the philosophical, ethical, and social implications of what's going on in our productive environment. When we roboticize the delivery of goods and services, which is big talk now, when we turn our police into robocops, when we, you know, with technology, look at the police. I mean, when I was a kid, a cop on the beat had a gun and he had a billy club and he had handcuffs and they were almost all he's, could be a real SOB or he could be a really nice person. He could be whatever. But he was a human being whose face you could interface with. Back when I was very active in doing politics here in Portland, Oregon, back in the 60s and 70s, I could talk to the police. I couldn't win the argument necessarily. But I can remember one point, some Southern governor was staying at the Hilton and was being interviewed and people were picketing him because of the segregation that he espoused in the South. And we were marching around the Hilton Hotel. And the officer who was the sergeant, I think actually a lieutenant on that assignment, said, look, our guys would normally get off here at 4. All the news people have left. What do you think about calling this at that time? And I consulted with some other people, and I thought, yeah, what's our purpose beyond this? We got our news footage. You know, most demonstrations, unfortunately, are basically news opportunities. Let's face it. So we said, okay, we'll close this down at that time. The result of that was that when I happened to be down at the police station and ran into the same guy again, he thanked me for helping his guys, and I began to have relationships. I'm not talking about snitching. I'm not talking about giving up my rights. I'm not talking about changing our policies. But we had relationships that allowed for open communication and a level of trust that lasted for a few years. It disappeared. And by the way, since I brought that up, I must tell you that the reason why the Portland Police Department, you may all know this, the reason why the Portland Police Department has a union is because the Longshoremen's Union made that possible by telling them that if the longshoremen put up an informational picket at the various ports, in those days it was the Portland Dock Commission as well as the present system, that nobody in the ILWU would cross that informational picket, which forced the city of Portland to allow the police to unionize. I don't know how many of you know that. I don't know how many of you understand the implications of that. Unfortunately, that particular bit of folk wisdom, that particular historic fact, has been forgotten both by the police and by most of us. The task there was to de-roboticize, this is an important concept, the police, to humanize them, to bring them into context where they could be people you could talk to. Now, that does not mean, that does not imply that the police are not the agents of the state and all the other things we know about repression and cruelty and blah, blah, blah. But what it does mean is communication was possible in Portland, Oregon at that time. Nowadays, if you go to a demonstration or anything and the police are there, they're wearing armor. They're electronically connected. They have no way. There's no way you can communicate. There's nobody there. There's no there. You're talking to a plastic mask. You get sprayed with poisonous liquids and gases and, well, oh, gee, well, that doesn't mean anything to those guys. They're not with you as a person. They're with you as an object in their way. We have to rehumanize society as we struggle for justice. And this is becoming more and more problematic. And I'm more and more concerned about it. When we use drones to spy on ourselves, when we use drones to murder others, when we use robots to produce our goods and services, when we essentially disconnect working people from the jobs that they can do, we have stepped over a certain kind of line. And I am very interested in this bizarre science fiction universe that we are stepping into. And I want to hear from you and your thoughts on all of this. 231-8187. Heidi, you're on the air.
Hey, it's so interesting that you're talking about this. Interesting and horrifying, Joe.
Thank you.
I think it'd be really, I don't know if you're familiar with what's going on in the indigenous science fiction field.
No.
But I just finished up I'd love to email you a bunch of resources because I just finished up a class at Portland State Indigenous Futurisms, which is the reclamation of that term science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing, and we're talking indigenous people across the world, actually. There's a global movement within the science fiction community, and they are talking about all of the interconnections about these issues. And so I'd love to email you some resources because I think it'd be really interesting for you. I've been listening to you. I'm like, oh, my God, he would just love a lot of the stuff that I read. And actually what I wanted to talk about, so I don't have to go into a lot of tangents about different resources, but what I want to talk about is the lack of attention and caring, if you will, about brown people across the ocean and all over the world that are getting droned, all the things that are happening and the reasons why. And I believe it's because it goes back to that mindset of, you know, us versus them type of mentality. And as long as it's, you know, brown people that are being droned in far off provinces, you know, like Jeremy Scahill covers in Dirty Wars, or even across the border, one of the resources I'll send you is a movie called Sleep Dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely horrifying and interesting in a way because they're using drones as a live reality show and you watch them go and drone people on live TV, and we're talking about Mexicans because this guy was like spying. He's like all Edward Snowden. There's so many things and layers in this movie. And so I did an exploratory project talking about all the things that you're talking about and what's actually happening. And I think we have to go a lot deeper in our conversations to understand how all these things are all interconnected. You know, the wall, the illegal wall in the West Bank is being built by G4S. G4S is this huge carceral technology company who's also building the security fence or wall or whatever you want to call it between Mexico and the United States.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, this is what's happening is while people aren't paying attention and having these superficial conversations, all of these great relationships are being much more entrenched between all of these large corporations and technologies and all of these things that are happening. And so our conversation, and this is why I'm so excited that you're having this conversation, because it causes us to go a little deeper. And if we're going to even be able to make a difference and have any kind of really revolutionary action against this, then we have to go much deeper and see how all these things are connected. So I encourage everyone that's listening to start looking at indigenous science fiction, because that's where it's at, really. If you want to talk about putting some political ideas on the table, And one last author I'll mention, China Meville. I don't know if you know his work. But
say the name again.
China Meville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, M-I-E-V-I-L-L. He's a revolutionary socialist, but he's written some, he calls it weird fiction. But he takes he takes what people are actually, what's happening to people on the ground under the military industrialized state,
mm-hmm.
and turns it on its head. And people's bodies are physically changed. Whatever dissent they were doing against the state is what physically happens to them. And it's like, it's crazy to try and encounter for the first time. But in a weird way, it's like, that's where we're headed if we don't start getting better at our conversation and our exploration of how these things are all interconnected. And I think having more conversations about what you're putting on the table. So I've said a lot, I realize, but I'm curious what you
Yeah, I broke my own 3-minute rule here.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was like, I shouldn't call in, but you're putting everything on the table that, you know, and there's some great, great work being done at Portland State in exploring these ideas. And again, I'll go ahead and, you know, if I've got.
Yeah, go ahead and email to me to the station here. And yeah. Maybe we can start a conversation. I really appreciate I appreciate your call. This is a topic I've wanted to do for a while, and this is an opportunity because Abe unfortunately has work he has to do, and this is an area I've been interested in since I was a kid. I think science fiction has really impacted me over the years, very much so. And this show from 1950-51 on NBC that didn't even have sponsorship, which used famous science fiction writers for their scripts, called Dimension X, is where I'm, it's my roots. You follow me?
Oh yeah, and what I mean, that's why. So I'm excited to actually help, you know, further those resources if that'll help you open up a whole new world. But what's really cool is you're actually putting on the table what is interconnected. But I think initially, what I was hearing when you were first talking about this show is that people don't see how it's all connected.
Not right.
Like science fiction and all those other things, but they really are, because those horrifying things that we're thinking is so futuristic are actually happening now.
Exactly.
So it's our lack of paying attention to those things and actually going deeper and challenging ourselves to have a broader and a much deeper
right.
understanding of that. So
the future
so
is
much.
Here, and watch
That's
out.
Right. That's right. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the call. You know,
okay,
I'm going to be doing, during the summer, I'm going to be sitting in to do some of the Friday talk shows as well as our Tuesday shows. I hope people won't resent my being on the air twice in a week. If they do, I'll go away. But I think it's really, really important that we start having a little more speculative conversation. We all, I think the audience at KBOO pre-selectively mostly, supports progressive ideas. Social justice, peace, environmental concerns, a whole host of issues. And those become repetitions, like a liturgy in a church of some kind that doesn't have enough life, and therefore cannot reach as large an audience as it needs to. And KBOO has this problem of having a pre-selected audience. I want to open that up. I want to open that up for the station. I want to open that up for this nation. I believe that we need to face the future, which is here now and is deadly, and is an environment in which resources are burned or destroyed or used to poison us, an environment in which we murderously kill our fellow humans, and we do it without any compunction, because it's not war anymore. It's a TV game. It's some kind of computer thing. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you on the subject of the future. I want to hear from you on the subject of war. I want to hear from you on the subject of robotics, of all things. 231-8187. Jim, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
George Orwell.
Yes.
1984.
Right.
Very clear. That those who control the past control the future. Truth is an essential element in maintaining a democracy.
Yes. Yeah.
The United States right now is in a situation which goes well beyond the horrors of 1984. We are in a state of perpetual war, constant surveillance of the population is a reality. The events of September 11th, 2001, form a pivotal entry into this era. The facts of what actually took place on that day remain hidden because people will not face the facts. I'll leave you with that.
No, I think I appreciate that. I think we probably argue about the facts, but I appreciate that very much. And I think you're right. I think that the attack on the United States rationalized and justified an incredible process in which the Cheneyists, I'll call them that, got to take over the American foreign policy and the American domestic policy of the United States and turned us even more into the mechanized state of war that we see ourselves in today. Obama's not up to it, it's clear. He doesn't, either he doesn't have the intellectual skills or he doesn't have the power or he doesn't have the will to take on these challenges. I'm gonna let other people.
Speaking of the will.
Yeah, go ahead.
Power. Speaking of the will.
Yes, quick.
I was present at the World Trade Center subsequent to the attacks.
Oh, really?
And it is very clear that the buildings, which actually disappeared, had to have been brought down by explosives.
Well, I don't want to. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you about that. That is not so relevant to my conversation today.
That's why I brought it up. Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, 231-8187. We are talking about the future, which is here today. We're talking about drones. We're talking about robotics. We're talking about workers getting killed on the floor in the shops in the United States at this time in the manufacturing of all sorts of things. And we're talking about the idea of having automobiles, which sounds so good, which will be automatic. You just punch in where you want to go and it'll take you there. There's no brake. There's no gas pedal. There's no steering. You just trust the machine. Remember the old joke? Nothing, you know, you go into the airplane, this is an automatic airplane, and we are taking off now, and we are going things, and nothing can go wrong, nothing can go wrong, nothing can go like that. I am very deeply frightened by the future, a future which is cold and unhuman and uncaring and absolutely serving the interests of a ruling class. I want to hear from you. This is not just science fiction. It is science fiction that is turning into science as we speak. 231-8187. Gene.
Good morning, Joe. It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. Now, how do those of us who advocate for our nation's constitutional principles and those of you who advocate for democratic socialism come mm-hmm. together to create a 99% to marginalize the military-industrial complex?
Well, that's the question.
I've been looking into the Orwellian aspects of what's going on myself,
mm-hmm.
and I think everything is to a degree up is down, and what they've done is they equate the ruling class equates truth with falsehoods and makes things really complex. I'd like to put forward the premise that one cannot be a left-winger and anti-war because they are the antithesis of one another, because left-wingers are economic nationalists.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. I'm not going to engage in that particular argument because I think it's very intellectual, but I also think it's very obscure. I don't think you dispute the idea that there is a ruling class in America. I don't think you dispute the idea that it's a moneyed class and that it has an enormous disproportionate degree of power, right?
No, I do not dispute that at all.
Okay. So where we come together, and you asked about how can these two be united, is a recognition of the situation. And once that happens, an analysis or sets of analyses can be drawn that may not agree with each other, but at least are based on fact. And that's what's really the beginning of something very, very important. And it will evolve if we all understand exactly what's going on. And that's kind of my role and perhaps yours. I want to thank you for the call, man, and give others the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, 231-8187. If you're just tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. My partner, Abe, is not here today. I'm going to be doing some shows on Fridays through the summer, and I'm going to be looking for your ideas about shows, and I'm going to be focusing on a little bit more on speculative stuff, like speculative fiction, which is another name for science fiction. I believe that all of the stuff I heard on the radio, not even TV, in 1950, 51, when I was a kid, little kid, has almost all of it come to be real. Not the space travel, pardon me, but so much else. And in fact, we live in what would have been regarded as a science fiction world. We have drones to make war. We have robots to make cars. We have essentially communications devices that are mechanical or electronic. We are in the future, and the future is not so nice. All right, I want to tell you some stuff. These are promos for this day. At 9 on Alternative Radio, distinguished writer Eduardo Galeano speaks on A Calendar of Human History. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a report from Iraq on the exploding war. Yes, the exploding war. Yes, the endless war. Yes, the one we set up. Yes, the one that will give the military-industrial complex all it needs while human rights, humanity itself, is put in jeopardy. Exploding war. Also continuing coverage on the abuse of tens of thousands of migrant children by the U.S. authorities. I don't know, does everybody know that a bunch of kids coming from below Mexico have come to the United States looking for a life and are now stuck in a horrible substandard living conditions, sleeping on floors with absolutely inadequate facilities, and we have no way of dealing with this. At 11, on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts talks with representatives from FAME, P-H-A-M-E, about the 30th anniversary of the organization, which creates arts training and activities for adults with developmental and physical disabilities. And at 11:30, Art Focus features Ava Lake, interviewing Susan Healy, who currently has a show at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. And I want to thank you, members, for your contributions to the station. And if you haven't done it, come on, give us some money. here's a note I got from Kathleen. Daniel H. Wilson, a Portland author who writes about robots, Robogenesis in his epic sequel to his blockbuster thriller, Robogenesis is described as a thrill ride about humanity and technology pushed to the tipping point. He'll be at Powell's City of Books on Sunday, June 22nd at 7:30 p.m. That's a little free promo for you. I am thinking that we must refresh ourselves from time to time here on KBOO. And one of the ways that I want to refresh ourselves is to talk about the speculative world of science fiction, the speculative world that turns out to be not speculation at all. We are in the midst of a revolution of the worst sort, in which machines replace humans and ethics disappears in the face of what can be done electronically. And I'm wondering what your thinking is. 231-8187. Sean, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for being on it. I do want to say thank God for KBOO.
Yeah.
Yeah, for absolutely. Where else are you going to talk about stuff like this, really?
Well, that's true.
Exactly. So just I'll try to keep it within the 3 minutes.
Okay.
And tying in both of the things you're talking about. There was an article in the Financial Times, maybe about at least 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm just racking my brain. I'm forgetting what the term is, but basically about robotics. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And the word recumbent keeps coming up, and, of course, that's not it.
No.
But basically, essentially, the study is that within 10 or 15 years, that robots are going to take over at least 40% of the workforce from low-end jobs to high-end, more management jobs.
Wow. That's pretty scary.
That is scary. And, I mean, this whole thing of talking about that not too long ago in the past, they were prophetic about the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even in that, they had no idea to what extent it was going to be the way that they supposed it to be, mm-hmm. and how fast it was going to happen. And
well, you know, I earlier mentioned, and I want to mention it again, Stephen Hawking's warning.
Right, exactly, and that was
artificial intelligence point. Won't have human values.
Right, exactly, and that excuse me, and that was part of the article, was that this is the displacement it's going to mean for the people who are going to be the real people who mm-hmm. are going to be pushed out of all these jobs, mm-hmm. and where are they going to go, and the tensions and so forth that that's going to create for those people trying to scavenge and try to compete for what few jobs are going to be available for actual human beings.
Well, and of course, once you have machines doing work, they don't give you any trouble. You oil them and they work.
Right, and then what that ties into part of this was the other piece of what I called about was that, of course, that whole idea is the premise about where humans got to the point of what are we fighting over, and that is that at what point did humans get to a place where equality used to matter, mm-hmm. and what matters now is such a strong drive of self-interest around hoarding.
Hoarding?
Hoarding. Basically for resources. War has a lot to do with fighting over hoarding everybody else's stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, controlling stuff. I agree.
Right, but that's part of the job thing, too, is that efficiency also ties into that. Because ultimately it's about profit. I mean, David Suzuki made a great example that humans have become so disassociated from their natural world that it's the economy, stupid.
Right.
That the economy is almost, the economy is like we've made it this, Wall Street and the economy are like this living thing.
Well, I've been a Luddite for some time, and I've always thought you should dig your own ditch. And I've always thought that you should, if you're going to eat animals, you should at least have some role in the butchering thereof. If you're going to grow things, you should have experience. You don't have to grow all your food, but you should have experience growing a garden. That, in fact, the connection that humans have with the physical, real world is invaluable. And there is this whole problem that I'm raising here that essentially says that when you create machines, that build machines, that are the machines that run things, you have stepped dangerously close to that place of artificial intelligence. And moreover, you have put power in the hands of the technocrats, who are the servants of a ruling class. And that's where I'm coming from. It really worries me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. And so they showed that in the indigenous world, too, for many, many, many centuries and so forth, mm-hmm. there wasn't such a thing as hoarding and ownership of private property. Everything more or less was shared equitably. But when they got to this point of, and it really came from a Western civilization over time.
Well, I don't know if I'd buy that.
Acquiring property and things and so forth. It's a certain level of mental illness.
Well, yeah, but I don't think I would tar Western civilization particularly with that. I think there are a number of forces involved in that. I think that we need to understand the function of industrialism in that context. Remember that the Aztecs, the Mayans, civilizations of China in ancient times or older times, the Islamic nations of the Caliphate, all were materialist, all had rich and poor, all had slavery, all had all kinds of bad things. So when we talk, and human sacrifice in the case of the Aztecs and Mayans, when we talk about these things, we can't even begin to talk about the progress of humankind if we don't consider the humanism that is necessary for that.
Right, right.
And the United States is the great experiment of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think you're right, and I think it ties in, again, to definitely the drive of self-interest. So I'll just quickly finish with what I want to say. The quote, and I wanted to recommend a book, a fantastic book that I think drives, of course, a lot of what's going on with war. I think it's easy to point at governments and so forth. They're all involved in it. But mm-hmm. Andrew Feinstein's book, The Shadow World, Inside the Global Arms Trade.
Right. Well, that's a good book.
Which drives this. And ironically, he has a great quote at the very beginning of it. It says, "Show me who makes a profit from war, and I'll show you how to stop the war." And ironically, that quote is from Henry Ford.
That's interesting.
So I'll just leave you with that.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. The reason why I said that was interesting, by the way, I'm saying goodbye to our caller, but Henry Ford, you know, supported the Nazis and enabled them to a great extent in his industrial efforts for money and for political reasons. Henry Ford also was one of the first capitalists to recognize the advantage of a supply and demand system in which there would be demand. That is, you pay your workers enough, they'll buy your cars, and that'll work out better than if you don't pay them enough. Now, we are at an age, at a point in history, in a point in the world, where we have really disengaged ourselves from reality, and the United States lives in a constant state of lies. I don't believe the 9/11 thing was a put-up job. I think there was incompetence in the part of the part of the security apparatus, but that's irrelevant. What really is relevant is that that event served as an excuse for a totalitarian regime in the United States to develop and implant itself thoroughly, both in our minds and in our physical world. And the result of that right now is President Obama and the administration and the crazy Republicans, and they are crazy, are absolutely committed to continuing a stupid, endlessly vicious war in the Middle East. The irony of it, from my point of view, is, for example, our new ally in attempting to stop the Sunni movement, extreme Sunnism in Iraq, is basically to form an alliance with Iran, who's supposed to be our enemy. I'm not saying that that alliance is foolish. Maybe that's the way out of the stupid situation, but I don't think so. I think perpetual war is part of our national plan for perpetual wealth for a 1% or less of our people. And I want to hear from you. And I want to hear from you on robotics. I want to hear from you on drones. I want to hear from you on all of these quasi-science fiction ideas that are part of our reality today. So, 231-8187. Randy, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for your enlightening chat.
I don't know how enlightening it is, but yeah.
Well, I don't know how to uncouple this country from its fear-based and faith-based politics and disenfranchise the military and its regional control, particularly of the Confederate states, its corporate paymasters, and, of course, our leading political party establishment. Maybe that's kind of a cumbersome inquiry, but...
No, it's the real question.
But these people, particularly that there are many generations of Americans that have never worked in the private sector. They are addicted to military spending. They live on PX bases. They rotate around the world at vast expense and risk to all of us. I don't know how you inseminate in these people a different concept of doing business or give them a different economic future. They are addicted to their fear and faith-based military ideology.
Well, we also have a revolving door between the military and the industrial complex and the congressional complex.
Sure. Giuliani, McChrystal. I mean, you know the names. I saw Wolfowitz on TV this weekend.
Yeah, you know, he's back. That complete fool who got us, who was a major figure in getting us in the disaster of the war in the Middle East. He's back as if he were a real expert.
Oh, they're rehabbing all those neocons. It's unbelievable. But none of this could happen without the capitulation of Obama and his team of incompetence. They have left the door wide open for this rehabilitation, for the architects of that fiasco in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't supplied any answers. That's not very helpful. But again, I just don't know how you the population has no grasp of the history. They've completely forgotten the seminal events of 2001 and the shock and awe campaign. There's no ability to retain that and measure today's events and performance with Team Obama over there.
Well, and I appreciate your call. I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to say one thing, which I think is really important. The actual reality of human so-called progress in encountering a globally changing environment is probably going to trump all of this conversation. Once the waters rise, it'll be a very different world. But listen, thanks for the call, man.
All right. Thanks for indulging me.
All right.
Good luck.
I got a little note here I'm actually going to read from our producer. How much energy are all these robots going to require? And will they be nuclear powered? I think so, eventually. Today, drones burn jet fuel, but they can only run for a few hours. A really interesting question in a science fiction context, and I really appreciate it. I want to hear from you. We're talking about drones. We're talking about robots. We're talking about war. We're talking about the military-industrial congressional complex. We're talking about the whole bag of bad wax. 231-8187. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Well, I'd like to talk a little on what I see coming. You know, there's the DNA. We have our DNA, which is the code of life.
Yes.
And programmers, turns out, there's a whole group of programmers that they're known as code writers. And they're writing code for various, you know, mm-hmm. applications. But it's my belief that there's the chance that one of these code writers could actually write the code of life for silicon-based life form. And, you know, and just as we, you know, our DNA is coded, then if they mistakenly or on purpose write the code of life, then life might download into the computer, and you'll have another life form on the planet. So it may happen by mistake, just as we found, you know, E equals MC square or the fractal formula for fractals.
Uh-huh.
This may be found as well. And so that's the line. And basically what we are is we're carbon-based life form birthing a silicon-based life form. And what's interesting is that if you go to Google and you put in the words Turing test, so it says here a computer program recently passed the Turing test by convincing a group of people via chat that it was actually a 13-year-old boy.
No kidding.
Yes, and you can Google that. And so here you have, and I think it was like Turing said something like a third, if you have 100 people, if you get a third of them to believe that it's a real child, then that is the first indication of sort of intelligence, because, you know, so that's already happened. And so there's this thing called Siri, which, you know, you can ask it questions on people's phones there.
Oh, right.
And I believe, you know, Siri's, my friend has it. And the series is asked millions and millions of questions every day. And my question is the program learning from all these questions?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting question.
Yeah.
You know, there's this movie, I cannot remember the title of it right now, about a guy falling in love with his program.
Mm-hmm.
And discovering that his program is also having love relationships with many, many people.
Well, yes. What I see happening in the future, you know how we've had like interracial marriage problems, and then we had people of the same sex getting married. Well, in the future, it's going to be can a carbon-based life form marry a silicon-based life
okay,
form?
Okay, well, I'm not even going to go there, but I thank you very much for the call.
My pleasure.
Hey, that was interesting.
Bye-bye.
I don't know. Can you? This is a Philip K. Dick kind of question. All right. We are talking about the present, not the future, a world in which drones kill surgically or sloppily, a world in which robots build our cars and other devices, and in which human workers are in danger, both in danger of losing their jobs and in danger of getting killed by the machines that they're supposed to be operating. We're talking about a very harsh, dark place. And I argue that the thing that will trump all of that is the reality of nature, the climate itself. And I want to hear from you. There's much to talk about here. This is just a kickoff of a conversation that I want to have over the years. And hopefully you'll join us. 231-8187. Harry, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to make a comment. First one is your show about 2 weeks ago, you only had women call in.
I did do that.
Yeah, I was hoping maybe you'd have to do the same for men, a men call-in show.
Well, I think we got that, in fact.
Well, we have issues, too, like prostate exams, colon exams, barbecue recipes, chili recipes.
okay.
Things like that.
Yeah, okay, man.
Okay, next is...
I think, by the way, colon exams are kind of cross-sexual. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, and next is hopefully you do some future programs on war.
Mm-hmm.
Example, the 100th anniversary of World War One is coming up in about a month.
Mm. Yes, and, it is. The Guns of August.
Yes, so they say. But reading, doing some research, how it started was Russia and Austria start fighting. They didn't declare war on us. Germany declared war on Russia. Japan declared war on Germany. This is World War One. People, mm-hmm. people forget they were on the other side. And mm-hmm. also, like Roosevelt, who's on the dime, well, he fought in World War One. Eisenhower, who's on the silver dollar, he fought in World War One. Stalin fought in World War One. Hitler fought in World War One. Mussolini fought in World War One. Tojo fought in World War One. So that'll be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my next comment was, you mentioned before you went to Portland State in the 60s, and I went to Portland State in the 80s. They used to have in the west part of Portland State, they used to have the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
That's right. I remember it. That was during the Vietnam War, and it was an ironic comment. It ran along beside the freeway from Portland State to Goose Hollow.
Oh, okay. Because I remember that because I worked in the maintenance department.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing was we had to redo Lincoln Hall, and on the doors leading out to the park blocks, because we had to, the inside, we had to strip all the paint and everything, and there was a lot of burnt marks, and they were saying during the 1960s there was a firebombing of Lincoln Hall.
Yeah, it was a very brief event, but it did occur.
Oh, okay, just making sure, okay. But anyway, that's all my comments, and thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, history is really important, remembering small events and big ones and understanding their implications for the present and the future is really important. I got another note here. Siri, you know, I talked about Siri, which is this information thing on Apple computers. Obviously, they're going to be storing, studying, and using every Siri inquiry. We are already entering into an age of robotics well beyond what we understand is happening. And this is very, very real. And the reason why I started this show with the music from a 1950 radio show, Dimension X, is because it featured the most most of the most sharp minds in the science fiction world of that time. That was a world that, for me, has particular appeal because that was when I was introduced to the concepts of science fiction, including the fascist Robert Heinlein, who, if you don't know his work, you need to pay attention to what a right-wing science fiction writer can be. All right, 231-8187. Mark, you're on the air.
It's Barth. Good
morning. Barth, I'm sorry, man.
Not a problem. The movie you were thinking about is She, where the guy falls.
Ah, yes, She. Right, of course.
The biggest thing about artificial intelligence is that, you know, the march is on, and nobody really has any understanding about how it will come out. The earlier comment about convincing a group of people that it was a 13-year-old boy. The computer talking. There's also the totally separate ability to reconfigure videotaped persons and have them say anything that you want.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, you know, enough footage of people, excuse me, doing the alphabet and saying certain words, there's now a computer program that you can have them sitting at a table and like speaking to Congress, for example, and you can make them say anything you want to, and it's completely seamless and believable in terms of facial and body recognition, you know, mechanics.
No, I agree. We're moving very rapidly into a world in which the things that are human and the things that are machine are inseparably merged in a very bizarre and inhumane way. Anyway, I really want to thank everybody for this conversation. I'm going to do more of these speculative shows if people want me to. I think it's useful. I think it's fun. And I also think it's extremely important. So we'll see you all next week. And we urge you to stay tuned to KBOO. Make contributions to the station so we can survive. This is Joe wishing you well. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
June 20th, 2014, Stories from the Streets is a groundbreaking celebration at Pioneer Square in Portland, Oregon, dedicated to exploring the life of hip-hop in the Pacific Northwest. Our mission is to raise awareness on the positive influences and lifelong benefits that hip-hop culture has had on our homeless youth and our community. All proceeds and donations from Stories from the Streets will directly benefit New Avenues for Youth Nonprofit Artist Mentorship Project. There will be graffiti, breakdancing, DJing, and rapping. Artists include Soul Miner, The Resistance, Black Butterfly, Ancient Soul, Mike Crenshaw, Lucky I Am of Living Legends, and DJ Andy Sparks. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. June 20th from 12 to 9 p.m. in Pioneer Square in downtown Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland premiere of the documentary The Bird Who Flew Alone, The Triumphs and Tragedy of Gene Clark, Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This documentary explores the life and work of Gene Clark, singer-songwriter with the Byrds. It's been made with the support and involvement of Gene's family, as well as a whole host of friends and fellow musicians, not least the three surviving original Byrds, David Crosby, Chris Hillman, and Roger McGinn. Again, that's Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning at 9.